to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah.
No mai, haere mai, kia ora. Thanks for tuning in. This is your host, Alison, and today I'm going to be talking about some exciting authors who have emerged onto the scene in the last few years and who write about the experience of human migration, which, of course, we're seeing on an absolutely unprecedented scale in the present day. So the questions that these authors ask go a bit like this. What is it like to travel to the other side of the earth in search of a new start or a new life? What does it feel like to lose your homeland and leave your family and friends behind? What is it like to try and fit in the new land? What sort of emotional baggage travels with you, whether you want it to or not? Well, let's find out. But before we do, just a reminder that the books mentioned in today's show are going to be listed on the Books and Beyond blog, which you can access via the Auckland Libraries website, which is aucklandlibraries.govt.nz, or else you can access it via the Planet FM website, which is planetaudio.org.nz. Okay, so I'm going to start with an Australian novel that has been written by an Englishman who spent most of his 20s in Melbourne, but he now lives in Norwich in the UK. And it's called Only Killers and Thieves, and the author is Paul Howarth. Now, many of you will have read or you'll be familiar with the writer Neville Shute, who also was English, and he spent much of his life in Australia. Some of his well-known works were ones like A Town Like Alice, which was written in the 1950s. Well, if you remember Neville Shute, this book is by far superior. It's much better than his writing. I really don't believe that Neville Shute's work has stood the test of time. But this one is really good. It's a very ambitious work. I think he was quite brave to take it on. So the book is set in 1885 in outback Queensland, where the Indigenous people and the white settlers or colonisers are suffering through an absolutely crippling drought that's eroding their lives and their hopes and their dreams. So the fact that this is 1885, what does it tell us? Nothing changes, does it? The environment is brutal, both physically and mentally. Now, the plot involves a murder that has absolutely devastating consequences for an entire community. The book's beautifully written. The harshness of the landscape and its effect on the inhabitants of the land is described in really vivid, stark prose. There's a definite sense of movement throughout the book, because, well, for thousands of years in Australia, all living creatures have had to travel and migrate in search of the essential resources like food and water. And then you added to the mix, you have the white settlers, the colonisers, who have travelled to this land with an entirely different agenda altogether. There's quite a sense of despair running through the book, particularly amongst the women. And of course, the Aboriginal women suffer more than anyone else. One of the things that the author describes really well, in my opinion, is the terrible dilemma faced by so many of the women in these desperate times. And that is that if they wanted to feed their children, then they were forced to trade in goods and services that would normally be unthinkable. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. It's just awful. But as a mother, surely you would do whatever was needed to be done in order to put food on the table for your family. So although the novel's pretty grim and probably depressingly accurate in a lot of ways, there are enough small acts of human kindness dotted throughout the narrative that give you a sense of some hope. And so the story is hopeful, really. So for those readers who are interested in the Australian outback and what it was like, say, 150 years ago, this is it's a must read. But for all of us, this is a very important work because it really does show us that the brutality of colonisation and what it does to everyone. It's highly, highly recommended. It's a good one. So that's Only Killers and Thieves. Now, the next book I want to talk about is a modern day story, and it's called Girls Burn Brighter by a writer called Shobha Rao, who is a youngish woman. She's about 30, I think. She was born in India, but she now lives in the United States. Now, those of you who know me know that I'm a real fan of fiction from the Indian subcontinent. And Shobha Rao is a rising star. This is her debut novel. Before now, she has written short stories that have been very well received, and she's written essays as well. So, Girls Burn Brighter is, as I said, it's a modern day story set in a village inland from Hyderabad in India, and it follows the lives of two young women who are from two quite different families, but they both belong to the weaving caste. The book, oh, it's such an assault on the senses. The heat, the dust, the smells, tastes, sounds. And there, you know, there's the most beautiful sort of sensual descriptions of weaving. I didn't know that weaving a sari could be such an experience. And we're shown the absolute appalling treatment of young, poor women. And this is happening right now. It's very sad. There's also a real sense of landscape. You get such a feel for the village, the river, the mountain, the temple, and the markets. And then we're shown quite vividly people's dreams of migration. People in the village, they want to reach the coast. That's the dream. And then when they're at the coast, they want to reach the big cities like Hyderabad. And then after the big cities, the dream is the USA or Canada. And we have to get to Canada. We have to get to America. But ultimately, this is a book about friendship, and it asks the question, how far would you go to help a friend? Now, the two young women's spirits are the things that burn brightly through the book as they navigate the brutality of their lives and travel to the other side of the world. It's a book about resilience and hope. Quite an emotional experience, but a very satisfying read. I highly recommend this. I think it's wonderful. So this is Girls Burn Brighter, a great book. And now I'm going to move to the Middle East, and I'm going to talk about, this is a new book actually, called Beirut Hellfire Society. And it's a novel by Rawi Haj. Now, Haj was born in Lebanon, but he now lives in Canada. He lived through much of the Lebanese Civil War, which went from from memory, 1975 to 1990. And he was part of the, he and his family were part of that huge exodus from that area of the world. I think you could probably safely say that his real life experiences drive much of his writing, much of his fiction, and that's understandable. Now, this book, Beirut Hellfire Society, it's almost a comic tale, although, in fact, maybe I should say it's a tragicomic tale, really. And it's about an eccentric undertaker in 1970s Beirut who provides funeral services for outcast dead people. So these are the people that no one else will touch. It's quite surreal and dreamlike in a way. The undertaking care that he provides to drug dealers, drug takers, prostitutes, murderers and other outcasts, it happens sort of between and amongst bombs dropping and family feuds and dangerous liaison of all kinds. And in this society, this society that's at war with itself, the only certainty appears to be death, which I guess, actually, when I think about it, that's the same everywhere, isn't it? But it just seems more so in war-torn Lebanon. It's a very visceral book, lots of unpleasant sights, smells and tastes. And it talks a lot about money, power, religion, war and death. And death is the thing that binds us all. So it's very eccentric book. It's very, very funny, and it's also very touching. It's very sad, but it's one that I also recommend very highly. So that's Beirut Hellfire Society. And I'm going to move on now to Canada and also China. So we're going to do both in the same book here. So this one that we're going to look at is called Do Not Say We Have Nothing, and it's by a writer called Madeline Finn, and the book was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 2016, and it's been absolutely critically acclaimed. It's a wonderful book. Now, Madeline Finn was born in Vancouver, Canada, and she was the child of Chinese migrant parents. But she now lives in Montreal with the writer Rawi Haj, who wrote Beirut Hellfire Society that I just mentioned. So Madeline and Rawi are actually a true literary power couple. So that's a shout out to Karen. They're a classic LPC, and they seem to be very happily together. So the book, Do Not Say We Have Nothing, it's an incredibly moving story of the musicians who suffered during and after the Cultural Revolution in China. The book, it begins in 1991 in Canada when a mother and daughter open their home to a young woman who has fled China in the aftermath of the Tiananmen Square protests. Now, the young woman, who seems quite an unusual woman, and there's some mystery around her, but she begins to tell her family story, and we find ourselves transported back to the Shanghai Conservatory of Music in the 1960s, where talented musicians were persecuted because of the music they loved and studied and had devoted their whole lives to. So it's such a moving story of the cruel tragedy of 20th century China. And the scenes of chaos and grief and betrayal, violence, they run in a real kind of counterpoint, if we're going to use a musical word there, they run at the same time as this sort of descriptions of music by the likes of Bach and Shostakovich. It really is beautiful and it's brilliant. And really, it's absolutely no wonder that it was so well reviewed. And no wonder that it got shortlisted for the Booker. So that's Do Not Say We Have Nothing by Madeline Fenn. And it really, it's really something. And now I'm travelling right round the globe. I'm going to go to Turkey. And this is a fantastic book too. It was published about a year ago. And it's called Without a Country. And it's written by Aysa Kulin. And this one was written in Turkish. So it's been translated. And the translator has had good reviews. Apparently he's done a good job of it. His name is Kenneth Dakin. So Aysa Kulin is a Turkish writer, and she's the author of that best-selling novel called Last Train to Istanbul. You're probably familiar with that one. So the book Without a Country, it starts in 1933 in Germany, just as Hitler's reign of terror is becoming unstoppable. And it follows a medical professor and his wife and children. And this family, along with many other German Jews, realise that they must escape Germany if they are going to survive. So along with about 30 other German Jewish scientists and their families, they discover an unexpected haven in Turkey where the hospitals and universities basically welcome them with open arms. So it's a beautiful story and so real. It's basically about the joys and hardships for the family as they adapt to life in Turkey and as they make Istanbul their home. The author raises really interesting questions about the challenges of integration and intermarriage and the shifting cultural identities of migrants and their descendants. It's very universal themes. Now, the main criticism of the novel that I've come across is that it's thought by some that the author has tried to fit too much into the story because it does span multiple generations and it goes from the 1930s to the present day. But aside from that, which I probably do agree with, it describes in a really beautiful way the experience of asylum seekers, persecution, dispersal, resettlement and integration. Now, speaking of beauty, Istanbul, the city, is like almost like a character in the novel. The sights, the sounds, the colours, the smells, they're all described in a beautifully evocative way. So this is another one. I just highly recommend this. It's called Without a Country by Aysa Kulin. A wonderful, wonderful novel. Okay, now changing gear a little bit here, I'm going to talk about a book called Scribe, and it's a novel by an American writer called Alison Hagee. And this is actually a dystopian tale. Now, I always like to compare books, and I often like to mix them up a bit. So this book, Scribe, being dystopian, I really felt that it was kind of like a cross between The Handmaid's Tale and The Hunger Games. But that's just my theory. So it's set in a fictional America that has been ravaged by a brutal civil war and where people have become refugees in their own land. It's a haunting and evocative tale about the aftermath of this civil war. The population has been decimated and the survivors of the war and then the resulting plague of illness, they've been really reduced to a subsistence way of life. basically because there's no infrastructure left. The book is, it's very eerie because although it's a fictional work, this whole story is not outside the realms of possibility, especially given the current political climate. So, yeah, it was quite creepy, actually, that just knowing that this could happen. Now, the central character is a solitary woman living in the mountains in a very dangerous environment. And she doesn't get given a name, only Scribe, which is more of a description. Now, she has a marketable skill, and that is that she can read and write, and she also makes paper. So she's able to barter and trade on this skill in order to buy resources like firewood and other sort of essential supplies. And so she has a bit of power in the community, but she's haunted by the terrible events of the Civil War and the loss of her family. It's a fairly short book, but it's a gripping, it's very gripping and fast-paced. It touches on really important and timely issues that we're facing at the moment. Migration, pandemic diseases, and the rise of authoritarianism. Now, this book, Scribe, I could really see this being a great addition to the English curriculum at secondary school. I think it's one that young people would really like and relate to, because we do know that they like a good dystopian novel. But this is an important book, and I feel as though it's a must read as well. Now, I'm coming back to reality, and I'm going to be in Pakistan and Canada for the next book. And now this one is a memoir, and it's only just been published. It's brand new. And it's called We Have Always Been Here, a Queer Muslim Memoir by Samra Habib. Now, this is a coming-of-age book that asks, how do you find yourself when the world tells you that you don't exist? So that's a big question, isn't it? Now, Samra Habib began her life in Pakistan. Her family were Ahmadi Muslims, and they were a small sect who were persecuted and threatened with extermination by extremists. They had to learn to be silent, to hide the fact that they were Ahmadi. Now, Samra writes so evocatively of being 7 years old in Lahore and witnessing mayhem and vandalism, riots, being tear gassed, and experiencing this huge sense of shame and fear about who they were as Ahmadi. And she asks, as a seven-year-old, who belongs if none of us do? And wow, what a question to ask, especially when you're seven. So in 1991, the family flees to Canada as asylum seekers. But it's so awful and probably so true, but they discover really that they've traded one set of obstacles for another. She describes in really heartbreaking detail the responsibility and burden of having to grow up so fast, because she has the job of communicating in English with the Canadian authorities on behalf of her parents, because she has the strongest skills in English. And then there's this really touching scene after they first arrive in Canada, where she says the only thing they recognise at all in Canada is Coca-Cola. And it's Coca-Cola from a machine, and they know what that is. So she finds refuge in the classroom and the school library, where she reads and dreams of a better life, a different life. So this memoir, it's very much a coming out story. So in two ways, she comes out as Ahmadi Muslim, And she eventually comes out as gay. And it's absolutely heartbreaking, but it's really funny in parts. When she meets a really nice woman, her mother says to her, "But does she come from a good family?" And you just laugh so much. It's that tragicomic kind of tale. So anyway, it's about travelling a complex path to find the simple truth about oneself. It's an honest, revealing and tender story, and it's about the multiple burdens that are carried by so many. And as you can imagine, it's received absolutely rave reviews. I really, really loved this book, so I'd highly recommend it. It's called We've Always Been Here, and it's a queer Muslim memoir by Samra Habib. Now, my last book that I wanted to do, it's just a really sneak peek, because it's a book that's just about to be published. And it's short stories by Chika Unukwe, and it's called Better Never Than Late, and it's about to be published. So Chika Unukwe is a Nigerian author who writes in both English and Dutch. She previously lived in Belgium, but she now lives in the USA. And she's received a number of awards for her writing, including the 2012 NLNG Prize for Literature for her novel that was called On Black Sisters Street. So I'm really, really looking forward to this one. It charts the unconventional lives and loves of a group of Nigerian migrants who are making their way in Belgium. It's interconnectedness, homesickness, and the tragic paradox of longing to leave Nigeria in order that you may one day return. So I can't wait for that one. That's Better Never Than Late. So that's been a whole stack of books today. We've been talking about books about migration, and we've looked at belonging, love, loss, grief, trauma, travel, homesickness, acceptance, denial, silence, power, refuge, coming of age, and coming out. They've been quite an emotional and revealing experience, and I feel very moved and educated by these. So thanks for tuning in today, and until next time, happy reading, haere rā, and ka kite anō.
Is brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.